And good evening, everybody, and welcome to Open Paddock Radio here on ETV Live. Sean joining you, as I always am. My special guest tonight, Doug. Doug, you are here, and Mike is not yet again. I think Mike's quit on us.
Now, Mike was on vacation. He came back, and he got buried in work. So, welcome to the real world.
And it's ironic that he left Disney World to come back to 80
hours. Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, you did crush it.
I as well am getting crushed. We're all getting crushed. It's that last push before the holiday. So, it's definitely been crazy, but we hope that Mike will be back with us here in a few weeks, at least before my last show for a while. And then tonight, Doug, we have with us a special guest from the Moss Road Indy Ladder System, and he is the driver of the number 88 Comfort Revolution Star Mazda Machine. Please welcome with us three-time race winner in 2012 Sage Caramello, sir.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Very good, thanks. Doug, thanks for putting everything together for us to have Sage on the show.
Oh, no, not a problem. Thanks. And Sage, thank you for taking time out to join us. No, it's kind of a rush back for you from being down at Road Atlanta there at Pete LaMalle. That's still one of my bucket list items, although I think I might only have one more year to do it from the way it sounds like. Let's jump right into it. Sage, I know we had talked about this, I think a year ago, but I don't think our listeners here have heard it. They haven't read it on our or seen it on our website. But tell us how you got associated with Andretti Autosports. From day one, you were involved with Andretti Autosports team.
From day one,
during
the USF
2000. How did your relationship with Michael get started?
Like you said, I'm from Nashville, Pennsylvania, and Nashville, Pennsylvania is the home of the Andretti's. Michael and Mario both live here in that Marco was here, so Nashville's been a big racing town, and Nashville Speedway was here. And my dad was a physical fitness trainer and became Michael Andretti's physical fitness trainer for when he was racing, and they became good friends. And when I turned 4 years old, my dad decided to get me a go-kart for my 4th birthday, and I guess that was one of the worst decisions of his life, I don't know. it just started from there. It just started from there. Followed me through karting, and I had a pretty successful run in karts, won a few championships, won a few races, and then I decided I wanted to go to the next level, and that was cars, and the first step in cars was Skip Barber, and that's where I went, and I ended up getting third in the championship at Skip Barber, and then after that I wanted to go even more. I wanted the next step, and that's when Michael Andretti really played a big role in my career, and he decided to start the USF 2000 team for me, and that's where we really got the ball rolling, and we ended up winning the championship right off the bat. First year, and then we went on to Star Mazda. We figured if we could do it the first year in USF 2000, let's try it in Mazda. And the year didn't go as well as we did in USF 2000, but it was a whole other animal for me to conquer. And it's a great learning experience, and just driving with the name Andretti Autosport on the car is just a big task that you have at hand right there with just that name. And you got to go out and represent it every time you're out on track. So. We finished our second year just now, like you said, at Road Atlanta with Andretti Autosport, and ended up getting third in the championship. So, things are going pretty well, and that's really my career in a matter of a minute or two.
well done. Tell us, how important is it for you that Andretti Autosport is involved at every level of the Mazda Road to Indy and IndyCar? How does that affect your career and your career plans moving forward?
Yeah, well, I think what Michael Andretti's doing is awesome, and I really think that a lot more IndyCar team owners should be playing a part in the Mazda Road Indy program, because this is where the young and upcoming talent is coming out of, and this is where this is where we want to come from to get to IndyCar. So it's the kids that are really interested in going to the Indy 500 and winning the Indy Championship. So and like you said, Michael Andretti is the only kid that has a car at least one car in every single category of the Mods Road Indy program. So just knowing that, that I actually have a defined path to get to IndyCar, and knowing that it could be in the championship winning IndyCar team, you know, so it's definitely a lot of pressure that I could make this happen, but you know, it's a lot of fun at the same time. This whole journey's been a lot of fun.
You know, a lot of people can look at that being involved in all four of the various levels from USF 2000 up to IndyCar, thinking that maybe that could dilute the total team resources. Is that what you've experienced, or have you experienced kind of the opposite? Have you been able to tap into the expertise of, say, James Hinchcliffe or Marco or Ryan Hunter-Reay?
Yeah, I mean, Andretti Autosport just itself is just such a professional organization, and having guys like Marco and Hinchcliffe and Hunter-Reay, and even the Indy Lights drivers to look up to and to get information from, it is a big advantage, I think, that really plays for us. And I remember I was at we were at Edmonton, and I was a little bit off the pace off of Jack Hawksworth, and we were about 6 tenths off, and we were P2 and Jack was P1, and this was going into qualifying, and I knew I had to do something about it, and I did everything I could in my engineering room. I worked with my engineer. We figured everything out. We figured our game plan, and I ended up going to the next step, and I went to James Hinchcliffe's hauler, and I said, hey, can I look at video? And James, you know, with open arms said, yeah, of course, here's the video, and he went over a little tricks he knew about the track, and then all of a sudden we end up getting pole. And, you know, so it's just the little things like that really help, and that's another reason why I love being a part of this whole Andretti Autosport organization.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, though, that you just spoke about, you know, it's great that you get to be associated with a team that's so, you know, so professional. They get a lot of depth at all the different levels, but as well, I mean, it really speaks to your commitment and your drive to be better and be, you know, a champion, really. And, you know, you realize, you know, a lot of drivers could just settle for second and be like, hey, that's not bad, second place. But you went and said, you know, where is it that I can go faster? You know, what tools are available? And that really, I think, you know, is what separates, obviously, the guys who are good to the guys who are great and who are champions and have real, you know, just real raw talent, is that drive and that. That's really important, I think, and something that you should be applauded for. You know, going into your next season, is just, it seems as you really have that drive and that determination to just do whatever it takes to be the best. And I think that's you know, more people in the latter series need to adopt that mentality.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, like I said, this year was a good season. I had a really good season, I thought, but you know, we had little mistakes, and that's where I need to grow off of, and I need to take my driving and my work in the engineering room and talking to the other drivers like Marco and Hunter-Reay and Hinchcliffe for advice. And I need to take that to the next level, and I need to improve on that to become a better driver and a better person on and off the track. And I think once we get that, we're going to really start putting up some results that we really like. And, you know, I'm really excited for the future.
Now, has this advice that you've been pulling down from Hinchcliffe and from the lights drivers, has this also flowed in the other direction? Have you been a mentor to the USF 2000 drivers as well?
Yeah, that's also another big thing. I had a pretty successful year in the USF 2000 car. So, I mean, any USF 2000 driver that goes up there and has a question, they usually just come to me right away and are asking. And you know, I actually had a really good relationship with the USF 2000 drivers this year, with Thomas and Shelby. So, and that was a lot of fun, and we'd go out to dinner every weekend that we could, and we'd just talk about it, and I told them some tricks on how to drive that car, because it was a little different from driving any other car, so there was some tricks to it, and, you know, and by the end of the season, they were really starting to get a hang of it and getting close up there to getting some wins. So, it's pretty cool. And also, I remember we were in Baltimore, and it actually rained, and they were... The IndyCar drivers, we were out before the IndyCar drivers, and the IndyCar drivers were actually coming to me for advice on, is there puddles out there? Where is it? we actually can help the bigger guys a little bit even, so it's good.
Nice. So, well, let's speaking of Baltimore, you had a pretty nice day at Baltimore. You won this year at Iowa. Successfully defended your
this year at Iowa.
But now you've got
your
this year at Iowa season. Tough road or street circuits at that. At Toronto and Baltimore. How important were those street course wins for you?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, I think my favorite, my forte, I like to say, is street courses for sure. It's they're definitely my favorites. It really is comes down to pure driver a lot of the times, and you really got to set the car up completely different. And the really great thing about the Baltimore weekend was, you know, it was pretty close to my house, so I had a lot of family and friends that came down for that weekend. And in race one, we ended up going all the way back to 12th when we started second. I made my way back up to second, and at that point, I was just driving with so much aggression, and I wanted to win the race so bad that I ended up making a mistake on my part, which I said was where I need to grow. I made a mistake, and I ended up crashing the car, and it really hurt us for running second in the championship. And like I said, with this whole Andretti Autosport organization, they're so professional, and they do everything they do so well that they got my car back together when I don't know if any other team would have got it back together, because it was a pretty big crash, and we got that thing back out there the next day, and some people doubted if it, even on our team, some people doubted if it was going to be a winning car, and we ended up winning the race by 10 seconds, you know, so that just shows on how good this Andretti Autosport team is, and the overall setup that I had on that car was just good, and the faith that the team kept in me was awesome.
Well, you know, speaking of faith the team has in you, that this season that you've had this year resulted in a test for you in the first in Indy Lights car, and looking forward to 2013, as I understand. What did you think of the Lights car? How big of a change was it from the Star Mazda car?
Yeah, it was definitely a whole other animal. It's about two times the amount of horsepower, so it was definitely a little bit of a jump, and I really had to wrap my hands around it. We were pretty quick right off the bat, actually. I actually adapted really well to the car. I think that car really suits my driving ability and my style a lot better. It's like you can be really smooth, but you need to be aggressive with it. So at times I overdrove the Star Mazda car, but this car, I feel like, really works in my favor for that driving style. So, you know, it went really well. We were pretty fast on old tires. We were top two definitely on old tires, and then we didn't get enough time to put our new tires on at the end there, so I really think we would have been able to go to the top of the charts. So, yeah, like you said, for 2013, you know, plans are still in the air. Don't know what's going on yet for plans. I really can't discuss anything, but, yeah, I mean, Firestone Indy Lights is in serious thoughts, and you know, they brought back Pocono for 2013, so that would be my actual home track, like 20 minutes away from me, so that would be an awesome place to run at, too.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. And, well, you already answered what my next question was, and that was if you were confirmed with Andretti for 2013. So you're still kind of working things out. Do you have a timeline on when we might know?
No, I have no idea right now when any announcements could come out or anything. So, you know, obviously, Andretti Autosport's my home. It's been my home since the beginning. So, I think only that it's appropriate for me to go to the next level with Andretti Autosport, and really that's what I honestly want to do. So, we'll see, and I'll try to get that news out as soon as I can.
Just remember, no Lewis Hamiltons. If you go to Andretti Autosport forever, you can't leave and go to, say, Schmidt Hamilton, like once you make, you know, once we get into IndyCars, you can't go there just because they throw more money at you. Don't do that.
Absolutely, man. Well, you know, we've been talking a lot about the racing. You've told us about the fantastic season you've had. But racing isn't all you do. You've been racing full-time in Star Mazda and all the off-track duties that entails, but you're also a varsity wrestler, and now you're playing varsity football. And Spike Rogan, a native of those parts, wanted us to ask you specifically if the Blue Eagles will be state champs this year.
Well, I don't know. It depends how we play. It's I think our team definitely has the ability to be state champs, but you know, sometimes we don't bring it, and we got to bring it. And we dug ourselves into a pretty big hole here with losing a couple games. So we didn't put all the faith in our hands. Now we put it in some other team's hands. We need some other teams to lose in order to go to districts and get that run to states. But yeah, like you said, I'm a three-sport athlete, wrestling, football, and racing, and varsity on both. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. I think I'm one of the few kids that still goes to a public school. I'm in 11th grade. So I like the whole socialization aspect of public schooling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, I think that wrestling and football gives me a little bit of beneficial. It keeps me in shape. It works my mental side and everything. So, you know, I like being a three-sport athlete. I think it almost makes me more like a normal 17-year-old kid, and that's what I want to be like. I want to be a normal 17-year-old kid. I just don't want to be, you know, some kid that's totally different because I race cars, because I do something that's totally different. I mean, that's cool, but, you know, I want to be able to walk around the halls with my friends and you know, I want to be able to step on the field on Friday nights and be known as the kid who caught the touchdown, you know, the winning pass. So
yeah, we heard you, know, you did that. Well done, sir.
Thanks. It's been going pretty good. So yeah, it's I'm looking forward to the rest of the season with that. But and also I got a job, and not many race car drivers got a job. I actually seal driveways for my actual wrestling coach. So I seal driveways all the time, and I work like 12-hour days. So it's nice. Like I said, I like to be like a normal 17-year-old kid.
We're going to hit him up for sponsorship for next year, right?
Yeah, right.
well see, go ahead, Sean.
I have to say that it's been some time, and I was just talking to Doug before the show about this, but I as well ventured in the realm of wrestling. And because Doug said that you were going to kick my butt, and I said you probably would, but I will tell you that I have the honor, the Indiana State honor, of being the only wrestler in history that's never won a match. I in fact did everything possible to lose matches, and you know what? Sometimes some would say that it was that me finding a way to lose the match was actually harder than just going and trying to win the match. So, because I think it was a kid from Kokomo, Indiana, as a matter of fact, that I wrestled, and they only made me wrestle him because they knew that I could beat him. And I actually found a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of certain victory. And after that, my coach talked to me and said my grades weren't up to snuff, even though I had a B average, and I was no longer on the team. So there, do that. Try that. See, that's a new challenge.
No, try
losing it or something.
No, you know, the beginning of that sentence, I thought I was going to hear, like, the only four-time state champ or something, and then you just come out with this.
I could be state champion in my dreams if I wanted to be. So I'm terrible at wrestling, and it was not my sport. So, you know, it was tough for me, though, because I was in the 103 weight class, but I could never get to 103. So all these kids that I wrestled were at, like, right at 103, because in wrestling, you want to be right at that peak weight. And I could never get there because my metabolism's too fast. If you talk to Doug...
Oh, sure. Blame it on that.
He'd say it's still running turbocharged, but, you know, I could never get to that 100. So these guys got like 7-8 pounds of muscle, and they would just annihilate me. So I never won a wrestling in high school. In fact, I think once we even had a match against one of my own teammates, just because they needed to fill a spot on the mat, and he beat me. So, yeah, embarrassing. So I was not
just the water boy, and the water boy beat Sean.
Actually, it was funny because then I went to manage baseball after that. I went to be the manager in baseball for the high school team, which is pretty much the water boy. I just didn't have to get water. I had to put up the flag and all that kind of stuff and keep the book. But, yeah, I couldn't play sports anymore. And they used to make fun of me by putting me on the baseball field because they knew I was scared of the baseball. So they would put me on the field and pitch. They'd have the star pitcher pitch to me like his fastball. And I'd just be scared shitless. So, but, you know, so, yeah, I was not a high school athlete. But, anyways, off the tangent.
Well, let me ask you a couple more questions, Sage, if you don't mind.
Yep.
You know, we've been talking about wrestling and football and whatnot.
And how did all these other activities, you know, your job, being in a regular school, being a regular, you know, upperclassman, how does this affect your racing? And a follow-up to that, our producer, JD, asked that, you know, if just in case racing doesn't work out, is there another career that you're potentially interested in?
I mean, that's a good question. It's, like, right now, I'm 100% banking on racing working out. It's my dream. It's my goal. It's what I want to do, and I'm going to do everything in my power to make it work out. But, I mean, if it doesn't, you know, I definitely got to keep my grades up academically, and, you know, I don't know. I honestly can't really say what I would do without racing, because it's just what I want to do. It's, I don't know. I really can't say. Maybe I'll do something like in like the Army or something, like the Navy SEALs. I think that'd be pretty sweet. But
go away, run far away. Don't go there. Just don't listen to Sean and his Air Force propaganda. Don't let him sway you.
Racing will work out. It has to work out.
Absolutely, it will. Absolutely, it will. Well,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, yeah, but like you said, it's with all these things I got going on, the activities and everything. It's like I'm just super busy, so it's like I'm never home. I'm you know, I come right from school right to wrestling or football practice, and then I come home at 7-8 o'clock and stay up a little bit and do an interview with you guys, and then go to bed.
Yeah, thanks for that. We didn't want to push you past your bedtime. I know it's school is important, so.
Well,
yeah.
Sage, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. And yeah, we know tomorrow you got to get back at it. And it's only 9 for me, but it's 10 where you are. So we really appreciate you taking time to speak with us.
Yep, no problem. Anytime, guys.
Yeah, all right. Thanks much.
Yep.
Bye bye.
See you.
All right. Well, there you have it. Well, special thanks to Andretti Autosport, who actually was doing some nice tweeting of the interview there. So special thanks to Ashley for putting that together for us. So that was awesome. It was kind of the last second I texted Doug. I said, you know who'd be great to talk to? Because it was when all the Firestone Indy Lights, the Firestone Indy Lights stuff was, test was going on and everything at Indianapolis. So I was like, we need to get him on the show.
Yeah.
So special thanks to Andretti Autosport for putting that together for us. It was a real joy, a real privilege to have him on. I guess it's going to be tough. We're going to have to find out who we're going to have on next week. We've had a couple drivers here the last few times. So, well, Doug, we'll go ahead and open that up to you for the Firestone or the Mazda Road to Indy, starting with the Firestone Indy Lights, because we did have at least one driver confirm a full season with Andretti Autosport with a little bit more. So why don't you tell us what's going on in the world of the Mazda Road to Indy before we go down to the IndyCar world?
Well, you know, the Firestone Indy Lights, we've seen a few things happen, you know, in developing for next year. But first and foremost, you know, Carlos Munoz gets signed on for an Andretti Autosport ride again in 2013. But yeah, as you said, but that's not all. You also get I can't keep up that voice forever. This is why I'm not in radio. He also gets to drive in the Indianapolis 500. So he's got a full season ride in Firestone Indy Lights and a ride in the 500. Absolutely fantastic. And you know, this is a kid that he started out a little rough. He had DNF'd out of St. Pete and out of Barber. But then he comes back and at Long Beach gets top five, a second at Indy and Detroit. Man, was he lightning fast at Indy. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, actually.
I mean, he was just blazing. It was fantastic to watch. Another top five at Milwaukee, and then he comes back with a win at Edmonton and closes out the season with another win at Fontana. So, you know, he is incredibly fast. The one thing is keeping the car together. He had four DNFs this year. Hopefully we whittle that down a little bit,
maybe only have one. Anyway, so happy to see him in another year in lights, and happy to see him back with Andretti Autosport. I think, we've seen a number of people do a couple of seasons in lights, but switch teams. And I think that kind of breaks up the continuity a bit. It doesn't allow a driver to really take advantage of that second year the way they could. Being with the same team, with the same engineers and all, having that consistency going into that next season. I think that's what really, really is important, and what's going to help him out in making that next step, that transition up into the IndyCar series. So anyway, congratulations to Carlos Munoz. Thoughts on that?
I think it's a, like you said, it's a good dig, and it's good really just to see overall that Andretti is still, it's still there's still just such solid movement. I mean, it's like everybody's getting it's just everybody's getting a chance.
Yeah,
and that's good. That's what you need, is just to keep moving drivers and get them into the respective categories. And into either, IndyCar, or go off to do something like Martin Plowman did and run in the sports car realm or something like that. It's just good that he's offering that kind of, all the Indy Lights teams really are offering that kind of experience.
Well, and I think as we were talking with Sage earlier, that Andretti Autosport really does a good job properly trying to develop their drivers instead of just looking at what kind of sponsorship check they're bringing, you know what I mean?
Well, and that's one of the things. I mean, I've never really seen a bad, a bad driver in terms of talent go through there. And I mean, if money hasn't worked out, then there's been, special things. I mean, you look just at what we were talking about with Sage right there. I mean, it's like, Michael opened up an F2000 team for him.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you want to race cars, eh? It's like, all right, well, I'll make this team for you, and I'll give you that chance. I mean, it's like, oh, thanks. And I mean, look at it. I mean, it's a step forward, and I'm sure eventually he would have went through it. But I mean, just look at, I think when you really look at Andretti this year, and I know that this is kind of veering just a smidgens off topic.
That's all right. Go ahead.
When you look at their Mazda Road to Indy apparatus, and you look at what they're doing in IndyCar, and what they've done for IndyCar as a as a promoting body as well. I mean, this guy, I mean, he has done it all in 2012. And I mean, and it really starts, I think, with just he's got his hands all over the series, whether it be in the Mazda Road to Indy, whether it be in promoting the races, whether it be just running, three cars in IndyCar Championship. I mean, Michael Andretti is doing what we should, which more teams and more owners need to be doing. And I think IndyCar could flourish so well if those other teams like Ganassi, like Penske, now obviously Schmidt sort of has something in place like that, but we're not sure if he's not using his own drivers, basically. It's not to the degree in which Andretti is. He at least has his Indy Lights team. I think it's one of those things where, I think the strength of IndyCar and what IndyCar is and could be is actually somewhat dependent on the success of Mazda Road to Indy and the owners and their willingness to contribute and run teams in the Mazda Road to Indy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's all I have to say on that.
Yeah. I agree. One of the things, when we look at Sam Schmidt, it always seems like Schmidt is going for the, he's getting the great talent, but the focus isn't as much on developing that talent as it is taking their money. You know what I mean? And maybe that's not the case, but it's the vibe that it has. How many times have we seen, someone from Sam Schmidt's Indy Lights team graduate up to his IndyCar team? It's not been often.
true.
John?
Yeah, I'm there. I'm
You're silent. It took me by surprise. You know,
it's not
normal.
No, usually you have more to say. So I was just anticipating that you were going to keep talking.
Oh. So anyway, continuing with the Indy Lights, news, we have the 2013 schedule released, and as Sage had mentioned, we're going back to Pocono, and the Indy Lights is going to be joining the iSide IndyCar Series there at Pocono, and so anyway, it right there in his backyard, it'd be so cool to see him race there, let's see, we've got St. Petersburg, Barber, Streets and Long Beach, IMS, Milwaukee, Iowa. Those are all standard. We've seen those. They're standard races. New one is Pocono, and then they're back Streets of Toronto. And as we mentioned last week, Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. I don't think we did mention this last week, did it?
We did not mention Mid-Ohio.
I mentioned it in my article and not in the on the podcast last week.
You and I talked about it this weekend.
Yes, that's it. And, I knew there was a conversation in there somewhere. I'm old, damn it. Give me a break. Anyway.
Drink water.
Indy Lights, yes. Indy Lights is returning to the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. Unfortunately, that's... partly because the American Le Mans Series is not coming that weekend. You know, one of the things that I know Mike and I have always enjoyed has been the huge variety of cars we get to see during that weekend with the American Le Mans Series being there. You know, we get to see all kinds of GT cars and prototypes and open wheel cars and junior formula cars. Now we've got the USF 2000. iSide IndyCar Series, and now Firestone and Indy Lights make their return to Mid-Ohio, which I think that's a really cool track for those cars. They put on some really great racing. Now, we do still get to keep the Pirelli World Challenge, so I still get my sports car fix when I go there, so I'm happy about that. But if they put Star Mazda on the docket as well, and we haven't seen the Star Mazda sketch have been released yet, but they put them on the docket as well. Man, that's going to be a packed race course. But then we're off to Baltimore again over the Labor Day weekend, and then we're off to another new place, Houston and Reliant Park. I'm not going to talk about Reliant Park. I'm just not going to talk about it. And then we finish out the season at Auto Club Speedway. So a couple of good additions. What I really like about this is we're adding some ovals. We're adding a new oval, Pocono, that's very different from the others. And so this is good. This is a good deal. I'm liking it. Other things in Firestone Indy Lights is Kyle O'Gara, who has been in USAC for quite a while, running midgets. He has stepped up to test a Firestone Indy Lights car for FanForce United. Turned 100 laps down at the Kentucky Speedway. So he's looking for a ride, and it might be a joint program with FanForce United and Sarah Fisher Hartman. Racing. We'll see how that turns out. Apparently he did all right. He had a good time. He didn't wad up the car, so we'll see if he can get the sponsorship together to actually field a car. You know, I'm thinking we might see a bit of a bump in the Indy Lights grid next year. You know, we've been languishing with car counts in the low teens, maybe not even teens, but this next year maybe we're up in mid teens. I'm not going to say 20 yet, but maybe mid to high teens at some races. I think we'll see a bump in participation. So that's all I have for the Firestone and Indy Lights. Did you have anything else?
Nope.
Well, moving on to Star Mazda then. Our man on the scene, Brian McKay, was down at Petit Le Mans at Road Atlanta there for the finale of the Star Mazda Championship. By the way, if you haven't listened to it, he had a nice little interview with Zach Veach there over the weekend. We posted that and popped it into our podcast stream. So check it out there. It's a really nice piece that the Brian did, in addition to all of his photog duties that he was doing. Really fantastic stuff. But anyway, Gabby Chavez, this kid, I am telling you, he is seriously quick. And if he doesn't end up with a ride in Firestone Indy Lights, I'll be stunned. I'll be absolutely stunned. There's no reason why someone shouldn't be looking to pick him up. But he won the Road Atlanta race there, the finale. I'm not going to say handily. He had to fight kind of hard for it. You look at the final results and you see the gap. Back to Sage, who came in second. That's 5.4 seconds. But that happened because Sage and Gabby were having one hell of a fight, just going at it hammer and tongs there on the last lap. Apparently, Sage's car was working better in one half of the track, and Gabby's car was working better in another half of the track. And Sage was able to catch up to him, but never could get around him. And the last lap he tried a bit too hard, perhaps, spun it, but kept it on the pavement, got back out and going, and stayed ahead of Connor DeFilippi, who was well behind Sage at the time. So his spin, although cost him time to Chavez, it didn't cost him a race position, given how far they were in front of Connor. That second place finish, even though he didn't get the win, that second place finish moved him up ahead of Connor DeFilippi in the championship point standings. He finished third, and it came down to a tiebreaker, which of the two had the most wins. So. Anyway, it was a fantastic race. I was watching it there on timing and scoring, but man, I wish they had audio like USF 2000 does. That's one of the brilliant things USF 2000 does, is they have that live audio and in the live chat window, right there along with the timing and scoring. So I wish Star Mazda would step up and do some of that as well. Did you get to follow any of the racing action from Road Atlanta this past weekend?
I watched a little bit of the Petit Le Mans, actually, but the Indy Lights, or I'm sorry, not Indy Lights, the Star Mazda, rather. I did not catch any of that, even the timing and scoring, but I did watch some of the race from Petit.
I didn't get a chance to watch Petit yet. But I caught little tidbits here and there off of Twitter, but I never did get a chance to watch it.
Yeah, I was watching. I was out there watching Martin drive his ass off, frankly.
Yeah,
and the LMP2 championship.
Later on we'll have to ask about what happened there with the he got excluded.
Yeah, he actually was in the car too long. Because there's time limits that drivers have to follow.
He didn't.
And they let him stay in the car longer because they wanted him to end the season after everything that he's done for the team. So they were like, well, we're just going to go for the win, and if we don't get it, whatever. I'm probably going to get excluded anyways.
Oh, bummer. Bummer. Well,
but it's all right.
Moving on to USF 2000, they've released their 2013 schedule. And starts out very familiar, Sebring, St. Petersburg, Lucas Oil Raceway. So we don't race in April, but we race in a couple times in March, and then, of course, in Indianapolis on the on that 5/8 mile oval at IRP, now known as Lucas Oil Raceway. But you remember last year we had that huge, huge gap in the summertime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where we had this massive, 2.5 month off season in the middle of the regular season. I shouldn't say off season. We had this dead time in the middle of the season. Well, we've kind of eliminated some of that. We still have June off, but now in July they're going to be racing on the streets of Toronto, and so USF 2000 going back up to Canada. I think that's a good thing, and of course Matthew DeLeo has got to be pleased about that. Native of Ontario, he's going to be happy to race in front of his countrymen. And then their standard appearance at Mid-Ohio. And then they join the Star Mazda guys at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca in September. And, you know, I can't tell you how silly I think it was that, in August. This will be right after Mid-Ohio. But I can't tell you how silly, no, it is in September, I'm sorry. Formatting error, it's screwing me up. But anyway, I can't tell you how important I think it is for USF 2000 to actually be at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca. I mean, it's Mazda that's providing the engines for these cars, and I think it's good for the series, it's important for the series to be there and race at Mazda's home track. And then we end the season in October at Reliant Park. I know.
You know it's your favorite track of all time.
A Laguna? Oh, absolutely.
No. No.
Oh, I remember watching the MX5 Cup race there and just thinking, you know, what is this, an autocross? Yeah, you're racing in a parking lot, for God's sake. You know?
That's true.
But anyway, so that's all I have for Mazda Road Indy now that I've taken up 3/4 of the show.
Oh, that's okay. It was nice. You know, honestly, this is us giving back to you, Doug. We're giving back to you because we always, you know, for the whole year, we always just kind of, you've got 10 seconds, you've got 12 seconds, you've got this, you've got that. We're giving back. I told you I'd make it up to you by letting you run more Mazda Road Indy in the off season.
Yep. And it was nice. So we really don't have a whole lot more to discuss, really. I mean, that there's not a whole lot more happening in motorsports, is there?
There is. There are some things. There are some. I wish we could just say goodnight, but there are just a couple things.
Okay.
That we need to talk about. And that is, well, first off, we got to talk about IndyCar. And
this damn story again.
I know, it's like, well, I'm not even going to say it because there are people in the chat room who are not of age to have this discussion. But, you know, it's like a bad night. Yes, Josh, we will get to the Indian Grand Prix, I promise you. We were only kidding on that. It's like a bad night in Bangkok, Thailand. It just keeps coming back and coming back.
It's
for life. It's a for-lifer. But, yes, Tony George actually has resigned his position, resigns from the Holman & Company Board of Directors, citing a conflict, to prevent a conflict of interest because his name had been mentioned about with the buyout of the IndyCar series and all that stuff, which I'm not going to belabor because you already know. But Tony George has withdrawn from that board of directors. Is not sure if they're still pushing. There's obviously a lot of rumor carrying on saying that Tony George will be the head of IndyCar by the end of the week, or, you know, Randy Menard's not going anywhere. I mean, honestly, who's to really say? I mean, we thought this was a done deal long ago, and it's back. It's one of the uglier sides of the sport, which was really actually kind of disappointing considering we've had so many nice things to talk about with the Mazda Road Indy so far tonight. And, you know, to have this story come up again, it's just like, you know, you got to wonder if they're really trying to make a move. I know that John Barnes from Panther actually had come out and retweeted somebody's message saying that, you know, IndyCar without Tony George at a position of power, you know, pretty much sees that the and this is obviously a rough remembering what he said, but basically saying that Tony George needs to be in a position of power. Obviously, I possibly disagree.
Yeah, I was going to say, please, no.
I disagree wholeheartedly. That's just my opinion. I know some people, you know, do enjoy him. I just don't think, you know, I think that he, with him running the series, I think he makes the series weak. Or having him in that position makes the series weak.
The only player in this story that that I would feel comfortable with in a leadership role is Zach Brown. And he is saying, no, I don't want it. I am quite happy dealing with JMI. Thank you very much. And in fact, there's a great article over on AutoWeek by Jenna Fryer that kind of lays all this out and says, you know, maybe IndyCar does need some new ownership, but please don't let it be this guy. But you know, the thing is, she makes the argument that the Holman and Company and the board of directors really kind of hung Randy Bernard out to dry. That yes, he's made some mistakes coming in cold, as it were, but they really haven't had his back either. And doggone it, we do. And she mentions this, and I agree. We do have the most exciting racing in North America I'll even include Rally. As much as I enjoy Rally America, I gotta admit that competition-wise, IndyCar has it. It's been exciting. Think about the championship this year and what a toss-up it was coming right down to the last race. It's just been epic. But we're not talking about that. Instead, we're sitting here talking about this foolishness off track, and it's really hurting the sport, instead of talking about what a great product this is and how you can use this, how you can go to sponsors and sell this to them as a way for promoting their products. Instead, we're talking about all this politics and who's buying what and what's not for sale.
Yeah. Well, it was one of the things here. Says the only thing, Nick in the chat room says the only thing that makes sense to me about Tony buying the series is he is buying low to sell high when the series gets there, but that assumes that it gets there to the high marks. So, that is kind of a good point there, but I don't know if he's actually gonna, I don't know what's gonna happen with it. So it'll be interesting, but. Not a whole lot going on in IndyCar. I know there was some talk, Ryan Hunter-Reay down in Fort Lauderdale doing some good things with his car, getting a day named after him, actually, the Fort Lauderdale, trying to give Ryan Hunter-Reay his own day for being champion.
Well done, Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. I still dream of the day that my hometown of Lafayette, Indiana, gives me a day, the Sean Peachin day. It obviously won't be based off of my wrestling merit, nor my media merit. So I guess the only thing left for me to do is go out there and get my legs blown off.
Marion was quite happy to see the last me, and every time I turn back there, I go, oh, crap.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and talk about Rally real quick before we get into Formula 1. We do have the Rally Italia. The Italian Rally, the Italian Round of the Championship for the WRC just occurred, and man, this event, as far as the open cars were concerned, and I gotta double check the chat room to make sure that Oregon Wings isn't in the chat room.
He's listening.
Yeah, right. I hope he's not there.
Be careful.
But I thought overall the battle for the top amongst the top cars. It was a bit lame, mainly because Sebastian Loeb, Petter Solberg, and Jarmo Latvala all crashed out of the event. Mikko Hirvonen kept his car on the road and was able to beat the M Sport driver, Evgeny Novikov, by a minute 20. Oetanik was 2 minutes and 21 seconds off the pace, but still on the podium. I don't get how that happens. To me, that's slightly embarrassing, but again, we hashed all about Ford last week, so we won't beat that dead horse. Mats Dosberg puts together a great finish in fourth position with his adaptive team. Ogier. Let's talk about Ogier. Sebastian Ogier finished fifth.
Nice.
And for the longest time in that VW run Skoda Fabia S2000, it looked as though Sebastian Ogier had a chance at finishing on the podium of the event. So, I mean, he finished just under four and a half minutes off of the lead. But, I mean, he was under a minute off of fourth place. I mean, he was running up in about the fourth position for most of the event. So, it was, sorry, JD, Mike Shaw's not around to actually talk about rally. I just seen that. But it's okay. We'll keep you another week. You're not fired. But this was all just kind of exhibition, really. The championships have all been sewn up. Chris Atkinson, another notable, would finish P6. Andreas Mikkelsen, P7 in the other Fabia S2000. Prokop, and then Solberg.
What happened to Solberg?
Solberg had an issue where he hit something. He went off and hit something and caused damage to the car. So, yeah, it's one of those things where the Fords were pushing hard. One of the things that's really interesting, though, is we now move on to the season finale, the RAC Rally Spain, and it's looking like Petter Solberg is not going to win an event this year, unless something happens in Spain where Petter Solberg is able to claim victory, which I find to be highly surprising, given, Mikko was able to win in the Ford when Latvala was not around and Loeb wasn't around and all of that. But, I mean, I'm starting to think, you know, it's really interesting and kind of sad that Solberg didn't win an event this year up to this point. And it was something that I even had called at the beginning of the year that I thought he would win an event. So, I don't know exactly what happened. So, it kind of sucks, but, you know, there's still Spain. Anything can happen. Competition being what it is great, but I don't think he's going to claim a victory because both Loeb and Hirvonen seem to be dialed in, and it is now the Mikko Hirvonen era at Citroën. Interesting comments from Mikko from this past weekend saying that Rally Italy was really the first rally for Mikko in 2013, as he now looks to take the torch from Sebastian Loeb and lead that Citroën team to a manufacturer's championship and a driver's championship. And this is actually a really big deal, and I'm not going to go on too much longer with it, but this is a big deal for Mikko, because if you remember when Mikko first broke into rally, a lot of people didn't think he did it on his own merit. A lot of people thought he just had money, like a pay-to-drive, really. And he slotted in at the Subaru team with Petter Solberg, and that was just a travesty, honestly. He was actually cut. So, this is a really big deal for Mikko going forward, and something that he needs to, he needs to really seize this moment, because this is really one of those defining, career-defining moments for him. Obviously, he did well at Ford. He was always given, pretty much preferential treatment every time. It was one of those things where, he needs to do well with Citroën in 2013, or it's really going to hurt his reputation when he leaves the sport.
Yeah.
So, and you have anything to add on Mikko or the WRC?
No, not really. Right now the WRC just, I don't know, we move forward, then we move back. And so I was initially really excited about 2013 with Red Bull Media House, and now I'm dejected again because my Ford boys aren't going to be there.
Yeah, again. We've talked about that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, now, long story short, I don't have anything else to add.
All right. Just
a reiteration of my disappointment.
Dave Henderson and co-driver Terrence McDowell won in a Super Production Subaru up the Mount Hood Rally. It's not the Rally America Championship there for the Mount Hood Rally, but it is a more of kind of a regional rally. So it was a Mount Hood, obviously, is just a beautiful landscape, obviously, for a rally race.
And Mike wrote a really nice article about Mount Hood event, and the fact that regional rallies can be just as much fun to go watch and spectate as as some of the national events from Rally America. Yes, it's a little different feel, but that can be a good thing. You get enjoyment out of going to, say, the IndyCar series races, but you also get enjoyment going to see the Weekend Warriors at your local dirt track too, right?
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. So I wish there were some regional rallies around us. I think one is up in Minnesota. And I'm too afraid of being carried away by the dinosaur sized mosquitoes that they have up there. So
nice. Well done. Well done, JD. Well done. He spray painted out Mike Shaw's name and put my name in there. So. Nicely done, sir. I would like to see more regional rallies. I think it'd be great. I think there's a huge market for rally if there were more of them. I don't want to have so many that were, kind of...
You don't want to glut. You know,
yeah, exactly.
You won't want to fracture the scene with a multitude of different sanctioning bodies and have them double scheduling and things like that and really watering down the events.
Yeah, kind of like the WRC and the IRC did.
Well,
and the IRC died.
And a little bit like the SCCA and NASA are doing in some markets.
All right, well, that's all we have actually for the world of rally. But let's talk about Formula One, because we do have an event this weekend, and you know what that means. It will call for our podium picks, as I do have a nice championship lead, as I noted to you when I came over on Sunday evening. I told you I was looking forward to you guys buying me dinner when I came back. So, yeah, but let's take a look at Formula One. And we do have an event this weekend in India. The news is a little quiet, honestly, this week. Kind of scary. Never good when Formula One's usually kind of a big story-generating machine.
It's a freaking soap opera.
Yeah, but now we've pretty much all the drivers have signed with all the top teams, so there's really no reason to, talk about that anymore. And, the championship's come down to a two-horse race, so, I mean, there's just not a whole lot. I mean, we could talk about Alonso and Vettel until we're blue in the face, and we probably will. Ferrari, I'm just going to kind of resort to the higher power that is Autosport. And Ferrari's saying that they can make up ground on the title rivals in India because they've done an aero test, and that's actually helped them with their with the aerodynamics on their cars. So they think that obviously the Ferrari is the limfac in Alonso's title bid. He's obviously drove the living hell out of that car to get everything out of it that he possibly can, but Ferrari's now kind of admitting, hey, we kind of need to give Alonso a little bit more of a car if we want him to win the championship or if he has any chance of winning the championship. So that's what they were working on this weekend. So what do you think, Doug, of the Ferrari? I mean, obviously we know in Alonso's hands it is amazing. But outside, and even in Massa's hands in recent weeks, it's performed really well. But do you think that Ferrari has enough to give Alonso that extra technical support that he needs to win the championship? Because I think when you put yourself up against Adrian Newey and Sebastian Vettel and that Red Bull, it takes more than just driving talent to win the championship.
It does, and yeah, I don't think Ferrari has it here in the run up to the final few races in the season. Alonso is a supreme driving talent, no question, and he took a slug of a car and actually made it a contender, and he gets mad props from me for doing that. Now that Red Bull is caught up and is running, at full steam, I don't care what little engineering fiddly bits that Ferrari comes up with now, I don't think they catch up.
Yeah. It's going to be tough for Alonso. Now, granted, that's not to say that Vettel can't have something happen to him, and it's something also that we should mention. Is that, with the championship coming down the wire like that, I mean, it seems as though in recent weeks nobody wants to win the championship because there's always failures or accidents or something of that nature. But, it's certainly say we still have a few rounds left in the championship, and we say, it's really a two-horse race between Vettel and Alonso, which it is. But that's not to say that, they can't have misfortune. And, I mean, this championship could be over rather quickly. Any weekend, any driver can fail to finish the race. I mean, even Alonso, he took himself out of Japan. And nobody would have ever thought, that Alonso, of all people, would make that kind of a driving error.
Yeah.
Any given weekend, anything can happen. The Renaults have proven to go back to kind of their 2010 reliability, where you don't really know if it's actually going to work out or not. So it's, the alternator issues being one of those problems. So
well,
Red
that
Bull
was what I was going to bring up is the alternator issue. And if Alonso really stands a chance, it's going to come down to the reliability of that Red Bull.
Yeah. Yeah, the Renault engine is going to be keen. It's going to be the one factor that we will be looking at for sure. So we'll see what happens. Let's talk about some other things that have come up that are kind of off track. New Jersey.
Yeah, it's gone.
Well, I don't think it's gone, but it's gone at least for 1 year.
Table.
yes, it's been put on hold anyways. We've heard a lot of reports all year long that the event was not 100%, we weren't sure if the event was going to go off on time. I think it was even like David Coulthard or somebody had some pretty pointed comments saying, these promoters are behind, they're not going to get done in time and everything. And, it's proven to kind of come to fruition because the race has been postponed until 2014.
Yeah.
So no Jersey Grand Prix next year. But here's my thing. I know how bad Ecclestone wants this race. I know he wants it. And I know he won't let it fail, and that's why they've been given this extra year. But I think, I would rather them take this extra year and really just make sure that they get it right. Because so many times we've seen Grand Prix hustle together. Look at Korea, for example. Put together at the last second. I mean, the track didn't even look like it was done. The people who work the track obviously don't care about the track because the year after the inaugural event, there was still food in the fridge from the year before, which is kind of disturbing.
That is kind of messed up.
And, that just brings it to new levels of sketch. But, it's one of those things where I know
cream corn.
Yeah, that's disgusting. Because I had cream corn for dinner, so you're a disgusting human being. it was a, I would just rather them do it right and get this race right so that we don't have any more issues with the image that Formula One is struggling to create in the United States.
Spike had a great idea for the title name of the race, the Situation Grand Prix.
Oh, nice.
I like it.
Jersey Shore. The Jersey Shore Grand Prix.
Nookie is a grid girl.
Oh, God. I've been scarred.
Well, you know, to be honest, I really have a hard time imagining that that this actually happens. If it does, great. I'll be happy to talk about it. But yeah, I'm not in it.
It has to happen because that I've never been to New York City, and that was going to be the time that I would go was for the Formula One race. So it has
to be in Jersey.
But I'm across the river from Manhattan. That's the whole reason that they had the race in the first place.
So you can from Manhattan, but you're not.
Well, they wanted to be in Manhattan, but obviously that's impossible. So they had to settle for the next best thing. So I just go to the track
right around Times Square. Wouldn't that be?
I would drive to the track in the morning, or take a train or whatever they do in New York. And then I would go back to Manhattan in the evening, and that's where I'd party my ass off, and you'd probably find me drunk and in jail in New York City.
You know, anytime you've gone to New York City, I would, that's exactly what I would expect. So.
Yes. So it would be bad.
Well, good news for Formula
One. Okay.
The Circuit of the Americas.
Oh, yes.
First actual laps driven in anger, or at least at speed. And I saw on Facebook today a brilliant little analysis from Jason Saney, who I've been following since his days in the MX5 Cup, and you as a Mazda fanboy should be very familiar with.
I am
the Mazda in the Continental Tire Series, I believe now, right?
Yes.
He drove the Mazda 3 in World Challenge for a time. Now he's in Continental Tire Series there. Again, I think it's still a Mazda 3, just a different spec. But he had fantastic things to say about the series, saying, quote, "The track is incredible. The facilities are staggering. I'd go so far as to say this is the single most important thing to happen to motorsports in the U.S. in quite some time. The layout, amenities, fit and finish, and sight lines make this unquestionably the nicest road racing facility in the States, if not the world. Imagine a 3.7-mile natural terrain circuit where you can see a significant portion of the track from any seat. Grand Plaza, amphitheater, viewing berms, natural preserves all grace the sight." And then talking about the circuit itself, it said it's fast, it flows, it's safe, it's got massive elevation changes in a unique way. Turn one is like a reverse corkscrew, and a signature element that is what makes it, I guess the reverse corkscrew is what he's referring to as the signature element that really makes the track great. It says it's a driver's track and will take a lifetime to master, if ever. So huge, huge praise from Saney about the circuit. And Jerome D'Ambrosio had a flying lap in an F1 car that he put up on YouTube. I may have to go put that up on the website.
Yeah, I watched both D'Ambrosio and Mario's lap as well, and the track just looks amazing. I was about to ask you how crow tastes.
Now, because, I never said that.
Here it goes.
Was going to be crap.
No, we didn't say the crap. We never said the track was going to be crap. What we said was that the event wasn't going to happen. They'll never have the circuit done on time. And yada yada yada, and we
get the circuit done on time, and I'm impressed with that, and then a little surprised.
Yeah, and it looks good.
We haven't seen a green flag yet.
Well, we haven't seen a green flag, but we will.
I think we will.
But the track, from what I could tell, just from looking at all the pictures and all the media that's been going on with the Circuit of the Americas, it is exactly what Jason said it is, and it is a phenomenal looking facility, both in the ride along videos and just all the pictures they've done. I mean, it's absolutely, they've put together something special down there. And, you know, who the hell am I to ever question anything they do again? So I will get off of the bandwagon of hate and join the bandwagon of love for the Coda. But let's talk about another. Let's talk about another pretty new track, and that is India. We have the Indian Grand Prix coming up, and like we were talking about before, this is at, this is coming down really to a two-horse race, Doug.
Yep. It's Vettel and Alonso. Vettel with the superior hardware, in my opinion. I think that's where the good money's at.
Yeah, for sure. It's gonna be good to take the fight there. Obviously, this is home track for Mr. Vijay Mallya and Force India, so it'll be interesting to see how they perform. Hoping good things for Paul De Resta. It's going to be a big weekend for that team. Big weekend, like you said. And I remember watching this race with you last year when we were running our Grand Prix and breakfast segments.
Mm-hmm.
And we both had said that the racing was kind of meh at the track, but we also both said, I believe, that the facility itself, I believe it to be the Bude International Circuit, is absolutely phenomenal looking. I mean, the facility itself looks smashing. The racing on track was more kind of Abu Dhabi-ish.
Yeah, the track itself looked pretty good. The Nick raises an important point there in the chat room. Is BJ actually going to show up? He's a wanted man in India right now. So
yeah, good point. Yeah,
he might just kind of lay low.
Nice. Yeah, he's like, I'll just let you boys take care of it this week. Kind of got some stuff going on.
Yeah. I'm going to be over here, away from the authorities. I don't know. You know, maybe we see him show up and
get arrested.
Say, come on, bring it, and see if they're actually serious. But
he's a billionaire. Can't he just pay somebody to leave him the hell alone?
That's what I'm saying. What, you think that about Bernie, too, like, right? But he's away from Germany.
I'd show up, and I'd say, hey, dude, here's 10 grand. Piss off. And tell me you're not gonna take that money. Oh, nice. That's actually funny. Nick says maybe he can circle over the track in his private jet. Good point. Hopefully the Indian Air Force doesn't come and get him. Splash him down over the Indian Ocean or something. Well, let's go ahead and take a look at the previews. Well, not really the previews, but more the podium prediction.
Yeah.
As it is that time, so I'm going to let you, Doug, since I'm the championship leader at the moment, I will I'll respectfully give you the first pick.
I will pick Vettel, and then, you know, in spite of the inferior hardware, I think Alonso finds a way onto the podium and comes in second, and Button is going to slot in third. I think Maldonado is my pick for first out.
Grosjean hasn't been suspended, right?
Not that I'm aware of, but I've been out of touch with Formula One.
All right, well, he's my first out.
Okay. He hasn't been suspended yet.
Exactly. So I'm going to go ahead and see to it that he is suspended and pick him as first out.
Nice. chaos, Grosjean.
Let's see here. Sorry, I was responding to Nick there. Let's see. So yeah, it will be Romain Grosjean first out. It will be Vettel. Oh no, I'm not gonna pick. It'll be Vettel finishing second. First, I'll have Vettel in second. So I'm gonna kind of go ass backwards here. Vettel in second. First place will be Lewis Hamilton. I don't want to pick him, but it will be. I know, I don't want to pick him, but I just have this feeling. And then third place will be Jenson Button with Fernando Alonso finishing fifth.
Second, fifth, huh?
Yeah.
No faith in the Ferrari.
No, I have faith in the Ferrari. Don't get me wrong. I have faith in it. It's just...
faith in it finishing fifth.
Yeah. So... so that's what I've got. So I don't know who's going to be fourth. That could be, probably, It's not going to be Massa. Well, it could be Massa, I imagine, but, you know, I'm not sure. So, but yeah, that's my pick. So I've got Hamilton, Vettel, and Button.
Okay.
And then,
well noted.
Yeah, so there you have it. I don't have any other things for Formula One. We could get into the Concorde.
It's still a few weeks out. You know, so we'll deal with that when it comes around. But really, is there much else going on other than?
Not to my knowledge. We're really just kind of focusing on Alonso, and Vettel. Well, mainly Vettel and Alonso. Reverse order.
Yeah.
So that's what we have, though, for that. Let's go ahead and get into the ETV calendar real quick. Special thanks to JD tonight, who's actually back and has been back for some time. But he hooked us up tonight with the engineering for the show, so we want to say special thanks to JD. We'll keep you around another week and won't fire you. I like the spray paint job. Instant credibility in my book, so, you know, I'll take it. Let's see. Thursday, October 25th at 7 p.m. Eastern, the United Sim Racing Association Thursday Night Thunder Challenge Series, Cancer Awareness Benefit Race for Milwaukee Speedway. That's going to be brought to you on ETV Live. It's going to present a doubleheader featuring sprint cars and Silver Crown cars. A $3,500 combined purse. Good Lord, why am I not in this race? And $1,000 to the winner of the Silver Crown race and the Sprint Car race. $50 entry fee makes up those winning purses, and with donations going to the breast cancer research. So obviously a great cause there. So tune in to ETV Live, see these guys do battle in the Silver Crowns and the Sprints. Moving on to Sunday, October 28th, Stock Car Evolution, or the ESR. L Elite Pro Series Chase Race number 7 from Martinsville at 8 p.m. Eastern. So that's the points leader is Warren Peed. Is just 7 points in front of Philip Stocks and is being pressured by third place Tom McKeever, who is just 3 points in back of Stocks. So sounds like they've got a hell of a championship on their hands there, and they go to Martinsville where obviously anything can, will, and always does happen. Monday, October 29th, we're going to have, and the winner is, a motorsport show from 6 to 8 p.m. with Fast Track Racing Series Track It Out, Sir Wesley Outland, who is a hoot. The guy is hilarious and is always a joy to listen to the show. They get some great drivers, great grassroots drivers, as well as some very good professional drivers on that show. Join Wesley, Mike Neff, and Midwest reporter Justin Rosen now. The lates and local dirt track news, NASCAR updates, driver interviews, and more live on ETV Live and ETV Live Radio, brought to you by the HD Radio Network. And then Monday, October 29th as well, after that show, we'll then move into the Real Sim Racing Full Throttle Cup Series, Chase Race number 7 at Martinsville. So join Mike Keaton and Wesley Outland at 9:20 p.m. Eastern Time as points leader Landon Huffman stretches his lead from 28 points last week to 41 over Guy Snyder. So that's obviously some misfortune for Guy, as 20 points is a pretty hefty margin. Chad Cole sitting in third place in that championship, just 13 points back of Snyder. So really, if you're not into sim racing or you're just kind of looking for something to fill the time that's motorsport related, keep it here, ETV Live, your leader in sim racing and sim racing broadcasting. So please keep it here and tune into these events. It sounds like we've got some great championships on our hands, as well as some great original content. And then next Tuesday as well, obviously, we'll be back here with you with the Open Paddock Radio live. Same bat time, same bat channel. It should be me and Doug again. And we will see if we can't get a driver on the show again for next week.
I have an idea, and I'll talk to you about it after the show.
Oh, you're going to make people tune in.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't want to say something and not have it work out, right? So.
Oh, that the only time that's ever happened was when we wanted Dario Franchitti.
Yeah.
So, But yeah. So, oh wait. JD wants me to fire him. Nick, you're fired because you don't know what a cool aircraft is. He may have redeemed himself with the F-35. The V-Stall plane is shit, and that's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah, that's really it. So, it's a great show this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Special thanks again to Andretti Autosport and Sage Karam for joining us here live on the show. It was a privilege and an honor for us to have him on the show.
Oh, absolutely.
Big shout-out to Mike as well. Mike, we hope that you're having a good work week. Hope that everything is well with you and the family, and we look forward to having you back on here in a couple weeks for my final show for quite some time, which means, you know what, I think next week we need to have the new kid on. Yeah. So I'll call the new kid. So I'm sure he's probably listening to the show, and he knows exactly who he is. So prepare yourself. You will be called this week about coming on the show next week. But thanks again. And I guess that's it. Do you have anything else, Doug?
I do. One thing real quick. Shout out to the members of the Kansas City Region FCCA. The fantastic welcoming that they've given me, and the all the help and aid they've given me learning how to drive my car properly and not mash the pedals. Although I still did a bit of that last week. In fact, I almost hit a tree. I mean, how often do you hear people say they almost took out their car on a tree at an autocross? And I just about did it. Anyway, big thanks for them for being so open and welcoming. Fantastic group of people.
Oh, yeah. And special thanks, actually, to them for all the things they've done for Open Paddock and coming to read your stories, view your photos, and watch your documentaries. Certainly, we want to welcome the car club and the car culture and the grassroots racing that is the SCCA in Kansas City, because it truly is also a privilege and an honor to have them come to our site and all the things that you've done with them has been fantastic. And I just want to say thanks to you for that, and a thanks to them for coming and visiting the site.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've gotten huge support from them. So.
Yes. So. And when I come back next year, in May, because I will be back in mid-May, I will be at the track. So I will get my membership, and I will be up there kicking the ass.
Proper. I'll have my SVT tuned up by then.
All right, well, bring it on, son. I will see your SVT and raise you still an ass-kicking. So,
probably so.
Yeah, indeed. And there shall be alcohol involved. But thanks again for everybody. And JD, I guess, is the part where we go home. We'll see you all next week. Be safe and talk to you soon.